Hello, this is Mike Harbath on another Shoot the Moon podcast. Today, we're going to talk about your deal. We're going to talk about your deal having just fell apart. And now what? Right? What are next steps? And what to be thinking about as you move forward? Today, I got my partner Ryan Barnett on the call with me. Ryan, how are you doing?
Hey, Mike, I'm doing well, and I appreciate you having us on here today. You know, we aim to get every deal done, and it's something in which I will tell you, even though we aim to get every deal done, I will come back to a phrase that you use often, Mike, which is M&A is just the most unnatural act in business. And today I want to pick apart, you know, why is that true? Why is it so hard to get a deal done? And sometimes why do things unravel at the last moment? And then if your deal did fall apart, what are your options? Is it really dead? I've heard another phrase of yours. You've mentioned the steak's fallen out of the frying pan and into the fire. I'm curious to understand, if a deal is dead, is it really dead? So I'd love to start out, today, and let's a high level and understand, what are some things that might break a deal apart? And are there ways that we can start to mitigate those risks in the front end before we even start to tackle on, why they fell apart and then what to do after it?
Yeah, for sure. I have a lot to talk about on this topic because we have some experience here. I might start with the thing that oftentimes kills deals is sort of a myopic view of the deal from your side of the table and what causes deals to fall apart, right? And a great way to avoid deals to fall, keeping your deals from falling apart is to be prepared to walk a mile in the shoes of the other guy. And I think where intermediaries in is they can balance those perspectives, those various perspectives, they help to kind of bring the ends to the middle. And so when deals fall apart, oftentimes they fall apart because there's no one either in the transaction, no advisor to play that role, or either side gets such a myopic view of the deal that they can't appreciate or understand or even respect the opinion of the other side.
It's when I hear that, it sounds like that can happen on major issues or it can happen on minor issues. And a major issue could be something where there's just a stumbling block, and a minor issue could be, let's say, a lease clause or a rent or a few thousand dollar change. In a multi-million dollar deal, $3,000 is not a huge deal, but it can cause those bumps in the road. Is there any advice you can give to people to identify the big issues? If you're already down a deal, should those big issues already be tied out by the time you even get to an LOI or in due diligence?
Well, many of them would be, but oftentimes deal structures change. People get advisors, sellers and buyers get advisors involved with legal and accounting and tax, and those create some bumps in the road, right? And I think, the major deal sticking points that we've seen certainly exist around not only kind of price and terms, which gets negotiated up front in an LOI, but also, the diligence information that's been provided in order for a buyer to formulate those price and terms needs to be clear and concise and accurate. Otherwise, you kind of put the buyer in a bad spot having to retrade the deal. And if a buyer retrades a deal, oftentimes that doesn't sit well with a seller. They think that the buyer is trying to take advantage of them, when in reality, what was found in the financials in due diligence might be accurate and just not presented accurately pre-LOI. So the seller really has to own that. And so I think it's critical that, if you want to help your deal have a higher chance to close, that, as a seller, your books need to be tight and you need to be fully transparent and honest with everything going on in the business, the good, the bad, and the ugly early on. Because that means that your due diligence will stand the test of time. Someone who's a credible buyer is going to do very rigorous due diligence, and they're going to find things in your business you may not even know exist. And so you need to be as fully transparent as possible. And when you hit those major issues or speed bumps or roadblocks, you have to be open and creative as to how you solve that problem. I think where deals come apart oftentimes or people get augured into one way of thinking or one view of the truth, and they suddenly, truth as they perceive it, and they suddenly say they're not going to be flexible. We're not flexible. We're not going to work towards the ends, towards the middle. That's kind of our way or the highway. And as soon as you kind of lose sight on the value of the overall transaction and get in, augured into, no, it's got to be this way or no way, oftentimes it's no way.
Yeah, that's a tough approach to getting the deal done. I think there's a level of flexibility that's typically needed across all teams to at least, to your point earlier, see the others, at least see where the other side is coming from. And there's parts in which there's kind of micro negotiations that are going to happen throughout. And my advice was to both parties would be focus on why you're doing the deal. Always take a step back and look at what this deal is. Is it accretive to the business? And can you work over those bumps over time? I think that's really, really important. But speaking of time, Mike, how does timing impact getting a deal done, especially on the buy side? We always note that time kills all deals. Why is that?
Well, I think oftentimes fear, uncertainty, and doubt creeps in. So, you know, you'll want to, as a buyer, strike while the iron's hot. And what I mean by that is, you know, if you found a firm that's interested in selling to you, you need to do your pre-LOI due diligence quickly and make a decision. And remember that you're getting an LOI signed with limited data. And the primary reason you're signing a letter of intent is to have a no-shop be exercised so that you can have enough time to do substantive due diligence. We've certainly seen many deals come apart even pre-LOI because buyers are trying to get due diligence information from a seller prior to LOI, and that just death by a thousand cuts ultimately blows up any potential transaction that could occur. We don't think that's a wise idea. We think you need to be expeditious in your analysis of value and make a decision and move forward. Remember that the LOI is non-binding other than the non-shop or the no-shop. So from a buyer's perspective, there's really, you know, if you find things that are different, materially different than what's been provided to you, then you always have the right, as I come back to before, retrade the deal. Now, from a seller's perspective, you get a lot of confidence in a buyer that can move quickly and knows what they're doing, and it puts you in a position to either say yes or no fairly quickly. So you minimize distraction, and we think you owe it to a buyer to do that. Be decisive about you know, your decisions around wanting to move forward or not. Don't drag it out because I think you can poison the well in the relationship with a buyer if you continually punt on wanting minor changes in the LOI or tweaks or more time to consider it, or more time to solicit other offers. None of those things are healthy, a healthy way to manage an LOI process. As far as post-LOI, you know, it's going to take 90 days. People will tell you that it'll take less time. People say they can move faster. We've seen very, very few people be able to do that. And the primary reason for that is because you have a lot of negotiation to do, a lot of integration planning to do, and most importantly, a lot of due diligence and legal work to do, that all takes time. And so you'll want to have a strong approach to that, a project management approach and a work plan approach that will be rigorous, and you'll want to move expeditiously through kind of your due diligence and negotiation and documentation of the deal so that it gets done on time. If it goes more than 90 days, we've certainly seen deals get done, but the likelihood goes down pretty dramatically that it will get done. And so if it goes to 4 months or 5 months or 6 months, doubt creeps in from the seller, or other doubt can creep in from the buyer. And then they start to fundamentally get too augured into their myopic view that I mentioned before. And then oftentimes they break down with deal fatigue. Deal fatigue happens between, particularly between LOI signing and close. And it's very, very easy to walk away from the table, over a very minor issue, because you're just tired. And we think that's also a big mistake.
Right. And Mike, this is kind of that flash in the pan moment. It seems like if the fire is boiling hot enough and there's grease in the pan, it's pretty easy to have a bit of an explosion. And using the analogy earlier, the steak has fallen out of the pan and into the fire. And I would love to hear your perspective of it. It happens in almost every deal in which someone gets to the point where he says, I just don't want to do this. And, you know, behind the scenes, that's actually often where we get to the point knowing that deal's almost done. So it's a curious dichotomy of what's a big thing that's going to blow up something compared to not. And I'm curious, Mike, if something comes to a boiling point and you get to the point where there is what we think is an impassable moment, what can you advise buyers and sellers to get, you know, how do you get through some of those impasses?
Yeah, the best way to get through those impasses is to use your M&A advisor extensively. They've seen these issues before. They're creative, and they should be able to negotiate around the problem, ultimately to move the ends to the middle. If you're flying solo, it's much more difficult because it's always usually an emotional response to a relatively minor issue that's easy to fix. And if you're the one having the emotion, you're not very logical and you're going to make bad decisions. And so, you know, we certainly see that. That's why only 1% of deals, M&A deals that are architected between parties that are going to construct the deals actually get done. Meaning if you're going to go roll your own, you have a very low likelihood of transacting that deal. And yet, on average, the deals get, you know, when you use an advisor, when you look at all advisors across all areas, you have about a 50% chance of getting the deal done if you use an advisor. And, you know, and our stats are, you know, toot our own horn a little bit, are remarkably higher than that at about 94% chance to get the deal done. And there's a variety of reasons for all of that. But I think advisors bring tremendous value to being able to, you know, non-emotionally navigate the middle ground. Now, a lot of people want to use their lawyer as an M&A advisor. And the challenge is the lawyer has a different set of objectives. Their objectives are trying to protect you from risk or potential risks, and oftentimes will give you bad advice around a deal term or a business item that could be easily remedied. And we've seen that also happen over and over. I'm not dumping on lawyers here, but certainly their perspective is one that is different. Their perspective is one of certainly finding middle ground and negotiating legal terms in a meaningful way to mitigate risk. But sometimes that's conflicting with negotiating reasonable business terms and intent. And so that's where the advisor comes in. Now, I think if you're kind of rolling your own and you run into one of these deals and you're going to try to negotiate it, or one of these what I'll call deal killers, the best thing you can do is take some time, right? Give it, sleep on it, go away for a day to let the emotions cool off, and think about, you know, walking a mile in the shoes of the other person and come back with a compromise position to try to solve the problem. And if people haven't lost all objectivity, which sometimes they do towards the end of a negotiation or towards the end of closing, then you'll be able to find a path. But as soon as you've lost your objectivity and you're myopically focused on only your interests, very, very challenging to get past those types of sticking points.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm going to transition here just for our last part of this segment and focus on what happens if a deal does indeed not happen. So let's take this bifurcated into a buyer and a seller. And Mike, if you're a buyer and you've gone through an extensive due diligence process, it just doesn't work. You know, are there A, should you have multiple irons in the fire, and B, what should you do? What's especially if it's been a grueling process, if you're a buyer, how do you handle a seller pulling back and saying no and then being firm in the process?
Well, I think you have to be resolute that about trying to, if there was merits enough to put in an LOI and begin due diligence and you're now in the middle of negotiating your definitive agreement and your seller walks away, you need to find out why that is. There's a variety of reasons. Sometimes deal fatigue just gets them where they throw their hands up and say, this is too hard and we're walking away. And there's no way to save it. Not really based in reality or based in, some sort of a, something you can solve. It's an impasse that's very difficult to resolve. Now, certainly you should try it, and this is back to the analogy used about steak being out of the pan and the fire. This is one of those moments. And you have to really understand the real causes of why someone is walking away. Is it a deal term issue? Is it a process issue? Is it an integration issue? Is it a financial issue? Or is it just we're worn down and we're done being distracted and we're not going to do that anymore kind of issue? And find out if there's another way to resolve the problem. And oftentimes there is a way to resolve the problem. So you have to be really creative. This is where the most creative firm wins on how you solve these problems. And I think objectivity is important. And I think time can heal some of these issues. We've had situations where people just put their pencil down for a week and get away from the deal long enough to be able to take a breather and then can come back to the negotiation. And that's been effective. Likewise, if your deal is dead and you've exhausted all opportunities to try to get the steak back into the pan, then it's time to move on. We do think it's important to have multiple irons in the fire if you're committed to a buy-side initiative. And it's important to be objective about those deals. And, if you find that the deal doesn't line up culturally, financially, or strategically, maybe you're the one that should be walking away from the deal. And you should also know that all deals, you're going to think that you paid too much. As a buyer and as a seller, you're going to think you didn't get enough. And those are the right deals, right? We kind of joke around a lot that everybody should be unhappy when we get to the end. it's a little bit facetious, but everybody should think that they left something on the table. And if they did, then that's probably the right deal.
Right. And I will note that it's an interesting process. Once you get very deep into due diligence and it feels like a deal is almost done, it's as an advisor, it's very hard to balance keeping a multiple buyers warm at the same time. To the point of earlier, you're typically not going to lock up multiple people under LOI at the same time if you're a strategic buyer. So you're not going to have multiple lockouts. Typically, you certainly could, but you're typically not going to see that. And it's a matter of your advisor needs to essentially juggle other opportunities around and keep them warm without keeping them going to market. So it's kind of a pitch for moving quickly on LOIs and moving quickly through diligence as sellers will only wait in the midst for so long before they eventually make a move.
Yep.
And then just to wrap this up, last question, Mike, if you're on the sell side and your deal eventually gets done, it's a heartbreaking event, and it's a real struggle. And sometimes there's stronger fatigue on a seller going to market, as it feels like they take a bit away. Every time you hear a no, it takes a little bit of your soul away. And I guess I'd love to hear, Mike, what advice could you get to sellers? And especially we see this in cases where there's a higher expectation of value, in which it makes it just a harder process. And what can you tell a seller that hasn't successfully gotten through, found their partner, found their match?
Well, I think what's important is to have realism about what your firm is worth and understand that. And there's lots of ways to validate that. You can validate that through evaluation through a firm like ours. You can validate that through an accounting firm that'll do evaluation from you, or there's, dedicated valuation companies in our space that do that. And it's an important point, because if you're expecting some number because it's quote unquote your number and it doesn't align, because there's other drivers like, hey, we need that to retire, or I want that to, pay off my house, or I want that to, do whatever I might do, or start my next business. And it's somewhat of an arbitrary number and it's not aligned with fair value of your business, then you're going to be disappointed, because you're going to have people that are interested that look, do a lot of forensics, and then they're not going to move forward. Or if they do move forward with an LOI, you probably aren't going to get the deal done, because aligning to fair value makes it easy for there to be many suitors and to be able to run a process and to be able to get a deal done. If you're not aligned to fair value, you're going to struggle, right? You might find that one in a million buyer, that what we call the overly exuberant buyer, who will pay up or pay overpay. But they're few and far between, if exist at all. And so, I think the best thing to do to minimize disappointments there is to be in a position to, have, fair understanding of what your value is. I think beyond that, when you're under LOI, you've gone way through a process, deal fatigue is a real issue, right? You are going to be run around the mulberry bush in order to get all of the documents together that are needed to sell, as well as to get through due diligence, and the rigor of that is a major distraction in a small business. So you just need to have your head around that, but that's going to occur, and it's going to take long, and it's going to be hard, and you have to be committed to the marathon, not the sprint, from that perspective, because it will take a long time. And there are things that are outside of your control and the buyer's control that may blow up your deal, like, financing might not come to fruition as you expect, or, maybe like in the case of the financial crisis in 2007 and 8 and 9, we had deals that were on slope with approved financing that didn't get to the closing table because those banks rescinded their approvals because they weren't in a position to offer those loans at that time. And, there's things that can be outside of your control that can blow up your deal and certainly can be disappointing. I think if you're truly committed to selling and truly committed to having it happen, you need to be in the right place. And you need to know that, there's going to be some fits and starts, and, that it only takes one. And as long as you have alignment around, realistic expectations of value and realistic expectations to how much work it's going to take to close, then you'll be fine.
Great. No, I think that's good advice, Mike. I appreciate that, and that's all the questions I've got for you today.
Great. So with that, we're going to tie a ribbon on it, guys. Thanks, and have a great day.